Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomoni Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Lakota Way, Stories and Lessons for Living by Joseph M. Marshall III. Chapter 10, Fortitude. Chante wash ake, Strength of Heart and Mind. The Story of the Old Woman's Dog. Long ago, in the days before we Lakota wandered onto the open grass country west of the Great Muddy River, there was a great summer gathering along a river of many low falls. It was a time of renewal. The sun dance had been performed. It was also a time to see old friends and relatives, to learn who had gone on to the next world since the last great gathering. Many, many people were gathered. There was great feasting. Victories were recounted. Warriors were honored, and dancing went far into the nights. The camp stretched far along the banks of the river of low falls. An arrow from the strongest bow would have to fly 10 times to match the length of this great encampment. Forgets nothing, a beautiful young woman from a small village of the White Swan Band sat at her lodge door preparing porcupine quills to be dyed. She pressed them one at a time against a flat stone with her thumbnail. Not every woman had her patience for this work. Forgets nothing could not help but watch the bustle and activity as she worked. Children darted about among the crowds like fork-tailed swallows. Groups of old men sat in the shade of cottonwoods to talk and to trade. Old women had their own groups. Somewhere a drum was pounding softly. She secretly envied the couples who walked by together, for she was not yet married. Not many young men came courting because she had a crooked foot and walked with a limp. An old, old woman carrying a large bundle and leading a large, handsome dog on a rope broke from the crowds and approached, stopping at Forget-Nothing's fire. All the women want to wear braided porcupine quills in their hair, on their clothes, the old woman said. Not many want to do the work to turn them into the many colors and braid them. You are young to be doing such fine work. I learned this from my mother and grandmother, Forgets Nothing replied. Sit and rest, grandmother, if you would like. The old woman smiled and put down her bundle. She seemed frail, but in her dark eyes there was a light, much like the flickering of a firefly. Her gray hair hung in 2 braids, and her face was etched with the furrows of a long, long life. Thank you, granddaughter. I have passed by many fires, but you are the first to offer rest to an old woman. As yet she had not let go of the rope tied to the dog's neck. Forgets Nothing stood and passed the willow backrest to her guest. The dog lay down as the old woman sat. This is a fine chair, the old woman said. It feels good to rest. I have tea, offered Forgets Nothing, and some stew. She noticed the dog was wearing a small square medicine bundle around his neck. It was decorated with blue quills around the edges. That is a fine bundle, she observed. Thank you. I made it. Thank you also for your kindness. My name is Good Voice, said the old woman. I arrived only today. I have medicine herbs for some relatives who are not here, so I must go on, though I will return. I have not seen a gathering like this in many summers. Forgets Nothing served her guests the tea and stew. She was a likable old woman. She ate quietly, savoring the stew as was the habit of old ones. Finished, she returned the large buffalo horn cup and sipped the tea out of a smaller cup. Her clothes were dusty, her moccasins worn. She had traveled far. How far must you go, grandmother asked Forgets Nothing. Not far, the old woman replied, but I must show them how to prepare the medicine. So I will be away from here for a few days. If you have no place to rest tonight, my mother and I have room in our lodge. Stay with us. Thank you. It would be good to sleep on a bed. I have traveled so far, but I must go on now. I wonder if you would help me in another way. I would be glad to, grandmother, said Forgets Nothing. Good, the old woman said. This is my dog. She stroked the animal's head gently. His grandmother was a wolf, they tell me. That is why he is so big and strong. He is a very good hunter, the best I have seen. And he is my friend. He listens to me without complaining or talking back disrespectfully. But I took a thorn from his foot only this morning, and I want him to rest. Can you keep him here for me until I return? He is quiet and is no trouble. I will keep him for you, promised Forgets Nothing. The dog wagged his tail as if he understood. Does he have a name? Good, the old woman was happy and labored to her feet. He has no name. Perhaps he will think of something. I will give you something for keeping him. Remember, he is all I have in the world. So saying, the old woman handed the dog's rope to Forgets Nothing, grabbed her large bundle and walked away, quickly losing herself in the crowd. Forgets Nothing tied the dog's rope to the smoke flap pole and tossed him a scrap of meat. The dog took it with a wag of his tail, swallowed it, and looked up at Forgets Nothing, his brown eyes bright and inquisitive. A name for you is not difficult, she told him. I shall call you Wolf Eyes, because your grandmother is a wolf. I think you have her eyes. Forgets Nothing's mother, Corn Woman, returned from a visit. We have a dog now? She asked. Only for a few days, explained Forgets Nothing. He belongs to an old woman named Good Voice. He has a hurt foot and she had to travel on, so she asked me to watch him until she returns. I have named him Wolf Eyes. The dog wagged his tail. He is a fine-looking dog, Corn Woman observed. As the old woman had promised, the dog was no trouble. He faithfully followed Forgets Nothing through the encampment as she walked about. More people arrived each day and the encampment grew larger. There were many dogs because they were the carriers of burdens, pulling the drag poles piled high with belongings. Except for the very young, all the dogs were big and sturdy, but none were as big as Wolf Eyes. He stayed next to Forgets Nothing without having to be tied, and took as much interest in watching the bustle of activity as she did. She talked to him as she would a good friend, if she'd had one, and he listened with great interest. At night he curled up just beside the door, and there he stayed until the door was opened the next morning. One afternoon a man with a limp approached Forgets Nothing's lodge and stopped. My name is Longwalker, he announced. His voice was deep and his eyes flashed. He was dressed well and had the air of a very important man. Forgets Nothing had heard of him. He was a great warrior. I have passed by and noticed your dog, he said. He looks strong. He looks like he can pull a heavy load. He is a fine dog, returned Forgets Nothing, and he is big and strong, but I don't know if he has been taught to use the drag poles. That is easily done, replied Longwalker. I have need of such a dog. It has been a moon since I was wounded in a battle. I suffered two arrows in my leg and the wounds have not yet healed, so I need a dog to carry my belongings. What will you take in trade? Oh, I cannot trade this dog to you, Forgets Nothing replied. He is not my dog. He belongs to an old woman named Good Voice, and I am keeping him here until she returns. Where has she gone? He asked impatiently. Perhaps she will trade with me. I do not think so. She told me this dog is all she has in the world. I do not know where she has gone, and I do not know when she will return. I have much I can offer in trade, the warrior insisted. I am a fine hunter with many tan elk hides to trade, or perhaps you would like a bear hide rope to keep you warm in the coming winter. Those are all good things to trade, the young woman admitted, but he is not my dog. I cannot trade with you. Longwalker was losing his patience. I would wager the old woman who owns a dog would like to have those things, or she is not like any old woman I know. She would be happy to know that you traded such fine things for this one dog. 2 tan elk hides and 2 bear hide robes, said the warrior. That is more than this dog is worth, and it is my last offer. Forgets Nothing did not like the man's tone, but he was a great warrior and she was only a young woman without a husband. She did not want him to become angrier than he was. If he was my dog, I would give much thought to your fine offer, she said quietly, but he is not. I cannot trade him. Your stubbornness will get you nowhere in life, Longwalker spat. Forgets Nothing would long remember the angry flash of his eyes as he turned and hurried away. That evening she told her mother about the warrior who wanted the dog. He is well known among all the bands here, said Corn Woman. He has 2 wives and more belongings than they can carry. He is a man who gets what he wants. He may return. That night Forgets Nothing let the dog sleep in the lodge, secretly worried that the warrior would take him. But she never saw the man again. A day later, she helped her mother carry some dried meat to the south end of the encampment. A family had given away all of their belongings in honor of a beloved grandmother who had died. Now people were helping them with food and other necessities such as clothing and robes. Wolf Eyes followed Forgets Nothing as if he had belonged to her, and she found herself growing fond of him. He had an air of calmness and inner strength, and people looked at him and not her crooked foot. The family in mourning had a young child, a girl of 8 winters. Her name was In a Hurry because she had been born early. In a Hurry could not keep her eyes away from the dog. Wolf Eyes, of course, was friendly to the girl, who had just lost her grandmother. The girl's mother, Leaf, was curious about the dog. "He is the biggest dog I have ever seen," she said, "but he seems so gentle. Did you raise him?" "No," replied Forgets-Nothing. "He belongs to an old woman. She left him in my care while she visits her family. She will return soon." "In a Hurry needs a friend," said Leaf. "She was very close to her grandmother. Now she is so lost. She has not smiled since we lost my mother, until today when she saw your dog." Forgets-Nothing was dismayed because she knew what Leaf would ask. "We will stay for a time," she offered, "and I will come again tomorrow so that In a Hurry can play with him." "My husband and I would be glad to give you what we can for the dog," said Leaf. "Perhaps one of our dogs. My daughter does not take to them at all." "If he was my dog, I would be happy to give him to your daughter. I know how it is to lose a grandmother. I was 14 winters old when mine died. But I told an old woman named Good Voice that I would care for him. Perhaps you can speak with her when she returns." Leaf was disappointed, but unlike the great warrior Longwalker, she was polite. "Perhaps we will come to visit at your lodge tomorrow so my daughter can play with him." As they did and visited for the afternoon, Wolf Eyes patiently accepted the friendly attention of the young girl, and she smiled and waved when it was time for her to go home. Forgets-Nothing visited at their lodge the following day, but she noticed the wistful look in the girl's eyes when Wolf Eyes had to leave. So it was that on one day, In a Hurry and Leaf would come to visit, and on the next, Forgets-Nothing would take the dog to their lodge. Before long, the dog helped the little girl remember how to smile. Forgets-Nothing began to worry that something had happened to the old woman, Good Voice, and because there was no way to know where she was, no inquiries could be made. There was nothing to do but continue to wait for her return. Meanwhile, she found herself growing more attached to the dog. Early the next morning, when she brought out the night coals from the inside fire pit, she found an old man sitting by the coal ashes of the outside fire pit. Forgets-Nothing recognized him. He was flying by, a very powerful medicine man. His long hair was laced with gray beneath his buffalo horn cap. His face seemed carved from stone, but his voice was low and gentle. "Granddaughter," he greeted, "I am glad to see you on this fine morning." "Grandfather," she replied, "I am about to make a fire and will soon have hot tea. Perhaps you will have some." "Thank you. Hot tea is always good." He laid a handful of twigs near the fire pit and waited as she blew on the coals and dropped dry grass on them. Soon little flames were dancing upward, then she added the twigs. Forgets-Nothing went on with her work as Corn Woman emerged, leading the dog. She recognized the medicine man sitting at her outside fire and was pleased. A visit from such a powerful medicine man could only mean good things. "I am always glad for a fine morning such as this," said Corn Woman, "and my daughter and I are honored to have you with us." "Thank you, sister," Flying By replied. "The older I become, the more mornings such as this seem precious." In a while, the tea was ready, and Forgets-Nothing gave her guests a buffalo horn cup. The medicine man sipped quietly as the women prepared food. They knew he had not come to their lodge for no reason. They were eager to know, but waited patiently for him to speak of it. "I am here to ask something of you," he told them. "This is a fine gathering. Many people are here, and I have done many sacred ceremonies. There is one I must do some days from now, a ceremony that has not been done for 4 summers. I am talking of the Thunder Dreamer's ceremony." Forgets-Nothing immediately glanced at the dog because she knew about that ceremony. "A dog needed to be boiled for it," she said nothing. "The Thunder Dreamers are very powerful men and important warriors among us. They have asked me to help them with their ceremony. I am here because a dog is a necessary part of what I must do. But the dog that is chosen to be boiled in the pot cannot be any old camp dog. That dog must have certain qualities. I have been watching your dog. He is what I need. He is quiet and strong and seems to have a good spirit. As you know, a Thunder Dreamer reaches into the boiling water to pull out the head of the boiled dog. Then the other Thunder Dreamers eat the dog's flesh. The dog we kill and use must be a very good dog. If not, the ceremony will be weak and nothing good will be gained. So I have come to ask you for your dog. The Thunder Dreamers need his strength for their ceremony. The gift of such a dog to them would mean good fortune to anyone who gives it. Forgets-Nothing was afraid. Flying By was a very powerful man. Grandfather, she said, sighing, this is a very good dog. He is very strong and of good spirit, but he is not my dog. I told an old woman I would keep him for her. She was visiting relatives and told me she would return for him. If he were my dog, I would be very honored to give him as a gift to the Thunder Dreamers, but I cannot. Flying by quietly pondered her words, and his disappointment was plain to see. Yes, he said, I can see how it is. He finished his tea and accepted a horn ladle full of buffalo meat soup from Corn Woman. He said nothing as he ate. Forgets Nothing and her mother exchanged nervous looks and waited. That is the best soup I have tasted in a very long time, the medicine man said, as he gave back the horn ladle. He rose to his feet and smiled. That is a very fine dog, and he is fortunate to have such a good friend. Thank you for your hospitality. The old man turned and walked away without a backward glance. In a hurry came that afternoon to visit, and as she sat playing with the dog, a small figure emerged from the crowds and stopped. It was Good Voice. Forgets Nothing was never so happy to see anyone in her life. Grandmother, she said, it is very good to see you. I hope your journey was good. The old woman put down her bundle and sat. All journeys are good, she replied. We learn something from each one, good or bad. It is good to see you also, and to know that you have taken good care of my dog. She looked at the young girl next to the dog. And you are on a sad journey. I can see from the ashes on your cheeks that you are mourning. Yes, said Forgets Nothing. In a hurry has lost her grandmother. Sorrow and compassion washed over the old woman's face. Grandmothers are the very best friends anyone can have. There is no way to replace them, she said, reaching into her bundle and pulling out a small bag of fur. It was a puppy. Sometimes we can try to find new friends. I found this one along the trail, but I am afraid she needs someone young to run and play with. I cannot do that. Can you help me? She asked in a hurry. She needs a friend like you. The girl's smile was as bright as a new rising sun as she took the puppy in her arms. How can we pay you? Leaf asked. Good Voice smiled at the girl. Never forget your grandmother, she advised. Payment is not needed. The smile on the girl's face would not go away as she and her mother departed with the puppy. Grandmother, said Forgets Nothing, that was a very kind thing for you to give a puppy to that little girl. It is fortunate that you found a puppy on your journey. Life provides the gifts if we know where to look, replied the old woman. I am glad you have returned and that your journey was good, said Forgets Nothing. Your dog, I call him Wolf Eyes, is so big and strong that some want to have him. I know, replied the old woman. I thank you for keeping him. Elk hides, buffalo robes, and good fortune are very fine things to have. Many would have traded the dog. A great warrior, a heartbroken girl, and a powerful holy man all have strong need of the dog. But you have a strength of mind. You honored your promise to me. I am grateful. How is it that you know? Forgets Nothing was astonished. It only matters that I know. I also know that few people have your strength of mind. Others would have traded the dog for the fine things that were offered and then told me that the dog wandered away. Life will reward you for that. From her bundle she took a long wooden vial and gave it to Forgets Nothing. For your foot, she said. Rub it on every day. It is a salve made from the ankle bones of the pronghorn antelope. As we know, they are the fastest runner on the flatlands. Their ankles are thin but very, very strong. Good Voice stayed the night in the lodge of Forgets Nothing and Corn Woman. Forgets Nothing awoke at dawn and was not surprised to see the old woman's bed empty. The dog, too, was gone. She spent the day going about her chores with a feeling of emptiness. That evening she rubbed the salve on her ankle before she went to sleep. More empty days passed. She missed the dog and his inquisitive stare, but she also missed the old woman, especially when she noticed that the stiffness in her ankle seemed not as bad. One evening Forgets Nothing went to watch the dancing but stood at the outside edge of the dancing circle, envying all who could dance. She kept to the shadows as she always did because she did not want people to see that she walked with a limp. Like a sudden cold rain, a feeling of loneliness fell upon her as she watched several couples do the long, winding snake dance side by side, hand in hand. The drums pounded like a heartbeat, like the soft rhythm of life itself. Forgets Nothing saw couples who had eyes only for each other as they danced, and felt herself outside the flow and the rhythm. Grandmother, she said, talking to Good Voice in her mind, perhaps I should have asked if you had a husband for me in your bundle. In a moment she turned away from the dancing and walked slowly back to her own lodge. She was at her fire outside the lodge the next morning when a figure stopped before her, blocking the low rays of the morning sun. "I have just arrived," said a low, deep voice. "I will gladly give you all this meat if you would cook but one meal for me." Forgets Nothing shaded her eyes to look at the stranger. He was tall with inquisitive eyes. His shoulders were wide and on his drag poles was the carcass of a freshly killed deer. "If you cut up the meat, I will cook it for you," she replied. The man went to work. Forgets Nothing could see he was not much older than she, and his face was strong and pleasant. She built up her fire as Corn Woman emerged from the lodge. "Mother," she said, "we have fresh meat. This young man was kind enough to bring it." The young man stood to acknowledge Corn Woman, and Forgets Nothing gasped as she noticed a small bundle tied around his neck. His edges were curled in blue. Soon the smell of roasting meat floated about as Forgets Nothing carefully tended her cooking. The young man finished cutting up the meat and hung the pieces on the racks next to the lodge. Now and then Forgets Nothing glanced at the bundle around his neck. It was exactly like the one around the neck of the old woman's dog. "I will go to the river and wash," said the young man. "When you return, the meat will be ready," replied Forgets Nothing. She noticed he walked with a slight limp. He had neatly laid aside the drag poles next to his weapons and his large bundle. "He does not yet have a wife," observed Corn Woman, to which Forgets Nothing could only stay silent, but her heart was pounding. Before long he returned, and a skewer of meat was waiting for him. He sat and politely waited. "Have you an injury?" asked Forgets Nothing. "You are limping a little." "It is nothing, only a thorn through the sole of my foot," he replied. "Someone removed it for me." "Have you come far?" "Yes," he said. "I have been traveling for many, many days. I have never been here to this part of the country, so I was lost." "Where are you going?" "Wherever life takes me," he answered, smiling. "You have many questions." "Yes," said Forgets Nothing, "and I have another. Who are your people and what is your name?" He smiled again. "I believe I am from the White Wolf Band. My parents were killed when I was very young, and so I was taken and raised by my aunts and several grandmothers. I have a name, but I do not remember how it was given to me. My name is Wolf Eyes. What is yours?" Walking on Grandmother's Road. Grandmothers in every Native American culture, and no less among us Lakota, are the epitome of all the virtues we strive to learn and practice. One virtue they epitomize best of all is fortitude. At a powwow in the 1970s, I sat behind my paternal grandmother and another of my grandmothers, Nancy Whitehorse. I was engrossed in their conversation about grandchildren and their stories of the people who had passed on since the last powwow. Grandma Nancy noticed I was listening and beckoned for me to lean closer. For reasons unclear to me at that moment, she said, "If you want to go far in life, walk Grandmother's Road." Fortitude is Grandmother's Road. I know now that if we Lakota had not walked Grandmother's Road, that moment with those two grandmothers at the powwow would not have been possible. The demise of the bison, Tatanka, and the overwhelming encroachment of Euro-Americans were the two primary factors that ended our free-roaming life as nomadic hunters. The bison were decimated purposely, and the onslaught of Euro-Americans could not be stopped. Consequently, a lifestyle hundreds if not thousands of years old came to an end almost overnight. We found ourselves confined to reservations where we not only had geographic limitations to contend with, but also an intensive effort to tear our culture away from us. We were to become farmers, learn the virtues of hard labor, and turn into productive citizens. In the process, our spiritual beliefs were ridiculed and reviled. The new ways were not easy, and though a few of us did sincerely embrace them and change, most of us were reluctant. We could not resist militarily, so the only viable option was to go through the motions and make the best of the situation. We had to find a way to resist that would not bring repercussions. The only option was to walk Grandmother's Road. Historians, sociologists, and anthropologists look at the period between 1890 and 1940 as merely a time of change. From the viewpoint of the government, the savage Lakota had been tamed, and a concentrated effort was underway to civilize him. No one, as far as I know, took a close look at the emotional and societal effects of change within the Lakota community. If anyone had, it would have been discovered that women were in the forefront of a new order. Traditionally, women were the focal point of family, the comforters and the nurturers around whom family life revolved. The role didn't change. Instead, it became even more critical. Women didn't usurp the male's role as head of the family. They were too wise to take away the only responsibility men had left. During one of the most difficult periods in Lakota history, women fulfilled their ancient societal role and saved their culture. They held their families together in spite of the sad fact that children were taken away to boarding schools. A woman who was taken as a very young child to a missionary boarding school remembers lamenting to her mother that no one was permitted to speak Lakota. The dormitory matrons had sharp ears and were quick to severely punish any child caught breaking the rules. The woman's mother gave a bit of simple advice that symbolized an undercurrent of quiet resistance. "Whisper," she said. If the objectives of the government and the missionaries had been realized, we Lakota would be totally converted to Christianity, speaking only English and regularly denouncing our former heathen way of life, and more than likely singing the praises of Euro-Americans for rescuing us from ourselves. The fact that we still exist culturally has its basis in the quiet fortitude of many of our grandparents and great-grandparents. Instead of overly resisting, they quietly but stubbornly hung on to their ways. When their children came home from the boarding schools wearing short hair and speaking English, they hid their heartbreak. When the government outlawed the sun dance, the faithful simply danced where no one could see them. When the priests and ministers harangued them for their misbegotten ways, they smiled and nodded, went to a church on Sunday, and then convened at a sweat lodge on Wednesday. They learned to speak English and told the old stories in their second language because they knew their pride was not as important as keeping the stories alive. In short, they used the last weapon available to them in order to save the essence of being Lakota, fortitude. Two generations of Lakota walked grandmother's road. The ultimate result will be that the traumatic changes in lifestyle and all the losses suffered in the past 150 years will one day amount to nothing more than a bump in the road. Fortitude is quiet strength, closely related, obviously, to bravery and perseverance. Along with bravery, generosity, and wisdom, it is considered one of the four greatest virtues. Grandma Nancy Whitehorse's accurate name, Grandmother's Road, reminds me of the particularly hard winter of 1951-52. My maternal grandparents and I were living in a log house 3 miles from the nearest highway and 7 miles from the nearest town. There were at least two heavy blizzards that lasted for 2 or 3 days. One of those storms was particularly strong. The mournful howl of the wind only added to the tension I felt, and I'm sure my apprehension was obvious to both of my grandparents. If either of them was worried, it certainly wasn't detectable in their behavior. They went about their daily routines without a single comment about the cold, the wind, or the snow piling up outside. I vividly recall my Grandma Annie beating a leather bag. In fact, she had me string beads for her while she told me childhood stories of my mother and uncle. Her calm voice and demeanor was reassuring, and the storm became inconsequential. A few years later, I recall walking along the river bottom with my grandmother when a sudden wind sprang up. We pointed to a grove of sandbar willow along the river, and we watched how they bent with the wind. Not far from us, we heard a loud crack as an oak tree lost a branch. Sandbar willows are slender and about 5 to 6 feet tall. They grow in thick stands along creeks and rivers. We watched as they bent with the wind and lost leaves to its sharp gusts, but none of them broke. The oak, with its obvious strength, didn't withstand the wind as well. Fortitude is like the sandbar willow. To have that kind of strength, we must learn to bend with the wind. I was living with Grandmother Blanche Marshall in 1979 and was with her the night she received the news that her oldest son had died accidentally. I listened as her son-in-law, my uncle by marriage, gently and respectfully broke the news to her. Grandma Blanche sat with her hands folded in her lap, listening just as respectfully, occasionally wiping away a tear. In the days following, she was a picture of quiet, dignified strength. On the day of the funeral, she was the last to stop at the open casket. Only then, as she embraced her son, did she weep and give voice to her grief. Somehow she managed to do even that with a dignity that seems particularly inherent in Native American women, especially the grandmothers. Fortitude is what gets you through the moment your teenage daughter announces she found a special Fortitude is what gets you through the moment. Your teenage daughter announces she's found a special on belly button piercings and turns into Attila the Hun when you say no. Fortitude helps you endure the shock and disappointment of not getting the raise and promotion you were counting on. Fortitude helps you live from one minute to the next when you learn that your precious child is missing in action in some distant land or port of call. Fortitude comes to your rescue when you're suddenly faced with the unexpected. It is, I believe, quiet persistence, the ability to take one step at a time and make the best possible use of your attributes, which may include a quick wit, quiet confidence, a deep faith, or simple endurance, among others. Long ago, there was a race among all the animals on the plains. Each of the large animals had boasted that he was the best. The bison touted his great strength. The antelope bragged of his great speed, as did the hawk and the falcon. Not to be outdone, the deer said he was the swiftest. The wolf, the fox, and the coyote insisted they shouldn't be overlooked. Of course, with each one convinced that he was the best, there was no way to know the truth of it. So the animals held a great council, and it was decided that a race was the only way to settle the question once and for all time. Each tribe of the animals was to select its very best for the race, which would consist of 4 laps around the Baja Sapa, the Black Hills. Every tribe sent its very best, and the prairie around the Black Hills was crowded as the animals gathered. Every tribe on the plains was represented, from the bison to the mouse, one of every kind of four-legged, of every kind of winged, and of course, every kind of crawler. It was quite an impressive sight. The racers gathered at dawn, and as the sun rose over the eastern horizon, they were off. As one would expect, the antelope left everyone behind, followed closely by the falcon and the hawk. Up near the front were the bison, the deer, the bear, and the great cat. A noise like thunder rose up over the mountains as the race wore on, and a great dust cloud followed the racers. On and on they went, a great mass of bodies running and flying and crawling as fast as they could. By the time the first circle of the Black Hills had been completed, those who had started out so swiftly had fallen behind. Now leading was the wolf, followed by the great cat, the fox, the hare, and the swallow, and the owl, and everyone else was not far behind. Somewhere during the second circuit, many animals began to stumble, and everyone was sweating badly. As the third lap around the mountains began, the wolf was still in the lead, and the bison, the antelope, and the deer were far, far back, but still determined to win. In fact, no one yet thought he could lose. A strange thing happened then. Some of them began to sweat blood, but still they kept running and flying and crawling. The final circle of the Black Hills began with the wolf still in the lead. But now behind him was a flock of birds, among them the swallow, the owl, the meadowlark, and the magpie. The great throng of animals was lagging behind now, many of them barely moving, and all of them trying so hard that many more were sweating blood. As the finish approached, the wolf looked back and saw no one, but above him he heard a strange flapping sound. It was the magpie. Now the magpie is not the most graceful of flyers. In fact, he is the only bird that looks clumsy in the air. But there he was, flapping along. The wolf began to fade. Even his great endurance was waning. And ever so slowly, the black and white magpie pulled ahead to win the race. No one had ever thought this clumsy bird had a chance. To this day, every animal pauses to look up as the magpie flaps by in acknowledgement of his victory. And to this day, the earth around the Black Hills is red with the blood of the racers. Lorenzo Starrs, a quiet, soft-spoken young man, had a dream. But there were many obstacles. His family was by no means wealthy. In fact, his father, who had farmed for many years, died prematurely of a heart attack. Lorenzo pursued his dream anyway, working to earn money and finding scholarships. Sometimes the money ran short and he had to take time off from school to work, but always he went back. He never for one moment let go of his dream. His road through the medical school was a little longer than usual, but now he is Dr. Lorenzo Starrs. At the moment, he is temporarily assigned to the Wagner South Dakota Indian Health Service Clinic. Before that, he was at the Rosebud Indian Health Service Hospital on the Rosebud Sioux Indian Reservation. Dr. Starrs is an enrolled member of the Rosebud Sioux tribe. We all want to be strong all of the time. We want to enter the race at our best. We want to be swift and graceful and embody all the attributes the world seems to reward most. But in the real world, we are not all strong, we are not all swift, and we can't face every circumstance with every attribute or resource we should. But whatever we have or don't have, whatever we are or aren't, no matter how tired or disillusioned we are, there is still a need to be met, an objective to be reached, a dream to be realized. Chances are we won't reach our objective in one giant step. Success is rarely the result of one fell swoop, but more often the culmination of many, many small victories. Dr. Stars didn't achieve his dream in one momentous act. He made it happen with a series of accomplishments, each placing him one step closer to his goal. We Lakota still have a strong culture because our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents persisted in quiet little ways, thereby persevering the essence of who and what we are through the same fortitude that brought victory to the magpie. My maternal grandparents planted a vegetable garden every summer until the early 1950s. Grandpa Albert plowed with a single-bottom plow pulled by two big draft horses. The garden was always labor-intensive. In addition to planting, cultivating, and weeding, we had to haul water to the garden and water by hand from buckets, but the result was always worth all the work. Every fall, we harvested enough corn, potatoes, squash, beans, and pumpkins to get us through the winter, and there were luscious watermelons in the summer. One fall, we had a thinner harvest, and not because we didn't work hard enough to care for the garden. It was mid-July, the corn was taller than I was, and we were out, and it was mid-July, the corn was taller than I was, and we were doing our usual tedious chore of picking bugs off the potato leaves, when my grandmother spotted something just over the western horizon, a thin black cloud. Without stopping to explain why, he instructed me to pile dry kindling and green grass at several spots around the garden. I followed his lead, as did my grandmother. All the while, they kept an eye on the black cloud heading in our direction. As each pile of kindling was built, my grandmother would light it, and as soon as it was burning high enough, he would add green grass to create thick white smoke. I was puzzled at first, but while neither of my grandparents had time to stop and explain, I knew it had something to do with the approaching black cloud. Very quickly, we had managed to make a thick white smudge over the garden. Then I heard a buzzing noise as the black cloud was directly overhead, and I was horrified to find myself inside a swirl of grasshoppers. My grandfather handed me a wet burlap bag and shouted, "Kill them!" My grandmother kept the smudge piles burning while Grandpa and I fought the grasshoppers. Fortunately, the bulk of them kept flying east, but enough of them descended on our garden to do considerable damage. I swung that burlap bag until my arms were ready to drop off. In spite of the many grasshoppers I knocked down, hundreds more still crawled everywhere in our garden. It seemed as though every leaf were covered. We knocked so many down that they crunched beneath our feet, but we didn't stop. By sundown, we seemed to be winning, but by then, every leaf in the garden had been eaten to some extent. After the sun went down, we lit lanterns and torches and kept working. Around midnight, Grandpa declared that we had probably saved most of the garden. The next day, we raked up dead grasshoppers and burned them. We had lost about half our garden to the grasshoppers. Weeks of work and patient care was obliterated in a few short hours. Neither of my grandparents complained about our sudden misfortune. "Sometimes this happens," they said. Our harvest was smaller that year, but I learned again that fortitude does have its rewards. Grandmother's road is not difficult to find. It is connected to all the other roads in life. Victory does not always go to the strongest or the swiftest. Those who turn onto grandmother's road will find there is no room for impatience or despair. For those who use it do not necessarily move swiftly. Grandmother's road will, however, more often lead to victory than any other route. And that concludes Chapter 10.
This program is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to Ohomani Iotaka on KDKO 89.5 FM.